Bob Summers, Real Six. So you got news when you were in Singapore that you were to be sent home.
Mm-hmm.
Were you thrilled a bit?
Mm.
Yeah. How were you to get home?
Oh, we came back on a terrible ride back home on a very ancient troop ship, pre-war troop ship, which should have been scrapped pre-war, called the Dilwara. Everybody knows about the Dilwara. And instead of coming home in style, we got the impression that the army had finished with us out. So instead of having a nice cabin, we were all, about 20 of us, stuck in a blinking room with these beds on trays, you know. And it was all pretty rough. And this machine was so old, this ship was so old, it broke down 3 times coming home. And it broke down in the middle of a monsoon in the middle of the Indian Ocean, and the ship was doing about 30 degrees either side of vertical. And in fact, some of the passengers on the ships were Navy personnel going home, and even the Navy blokes were seasick.
So you didn't feel you were being terribly well looked
after? No. Yeah. From the moment we got on that ship, we knew you were down the road.
Yeah.
Mm. A very depressing thought.
Yeah.
Which was even worse by the time he got demobbed in England. I mean, it was disgraceful.
Mm. So what was the journey like back? Did you stop at places on the way?
Well, we stopped for a day in Suez and we got off the ship there and went and had a swim on the Mediterranean, just somewhere close by. And apart from that, it was pretty awful.
Mm.
The other thing that comes to mind on that is that we were asked where there were 2 places to be and he'd be demobbed. One was at Guildford and one was up in Manchester or somewhere up north. And I said I wanted to be demobbed at Guildford. Just put that out. Well, just as we were going up Southampton Water, coming home in the evening, I went into the ship's office, company office, and saw the list of people where they were going to be demobbed. They got me in the wrong place, Manchester. And there was a pile of demob documents there for Manchester and a pile of demob for Guildford there. So I got my demob documents out of that one, officer qualities coming through at the very end, and put them in there and turned up. And when everybody said, everybody out for the boat now for Guildford, I went with those, you see. And when I got to Guildford, they couldn't make it out. Oh, well, you're not on the list. I said, yes, but look, here's the thing. And it was accepted anyway. They just wanted to get rid of you, so they couldn't care less.
So, what was the demob procedure? I mean,
terrible, really. Mm. There isn't. You just went through a warehouse where they gave you clothes, and when you got at the far end, that was it.
Mm.
People had rail warrants, I suppose. Or, but Mary was coming to pick me up by car, so I didn't investigate that angle of it.
Did you feel that was very poor?
Well,
did you feel that was very poor at the time?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, because and particularly the officers anyway, you'd done 4 or 5 years thinking you're somebody.
Mm.
Then overnight, you're nothing. Mm. I mean, not that you felt anybody, but psychologically, you just thought, at least somebody could shake you by the hand and say, well, cheerio, my boy, well done, sort of thing. But there was nothing like that.
Yeah. So, coming back to Civvy Street, what was that like? I mean, you've never,
Yes, well, see, I got married by that time, so you've got to do something about it.
Mm.
And short while I worked for my brother-in-law, who's got a small factory, driving around the Midlands trying to buy steel for him, which was in short supply. Then after that, I looked around and I got myself with a job with a contractor, doing what I and scrubbing my. I was really set out to be working for local government as a civil engineer, but I'd scrubbed all that in my mind during the war. I thought, well, that's not the job for me. I'd ought to be a pen pusher, and of course, in those days, the salaries for local government officers was pretty meagre, you know. Mind you, they were all pretty meagre, but I couldn't see much future in that. So I thought, well, I'll go and get into the private thing, because I'd worked for Wimpy's just before the war, before I went in, and they were, and they kept touch with me all through the war.
Did they? How did they do that?
Well, sent me their monthly house magazine and paper or whatever it was, And oh, at the very end of the war, they knew I'd gone to Singapore. They said, we can offer you a job in Singapore, but they just started up a unit, and in Singapore. They said, there's a job there if you'd like it. And I said, no, I've been out here long enough, I want to get home. So I turned it down. Mm-hmm. So when I got back here, I got to scratch around a bit.
Yeah.
And but so I did that.
So did you go into engineering?
Yes, I went to civil engineering contracting.
Yeah.
And I virtually, after about 10 years, I virtually took the firm over that I'd joined as a scrubber, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, I set up on my own because I fell out with them and took all their work with me.
Yeah. I see. So you made use of your experience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, some more general questions really now. I mean, you've talked about quite a lot of officers and NCOs and so on. Yeah. Any other characters spring to mind?
No, not really. Well, not just offhand. I'm sure there are.
Mm.
Can you stop it?
Mm-hmm. I mean, throughout your military career, you must have had some occasional contact with military police. I mean, you mentioned that incident with the Russian soldiers, but... did you have any other contacts or observations on military police?
Oh, only once ever. Oh, yes, oh, well. No, well, not really, but I on an occasion when I avoided them, put it this way. Because 6 months before, while I was still at Oxford, before D-Day, there was no leave in this country. We were at Newark. And... I thought it was about time I got home, you know. So again, using my officer qualities, together with one or two others, we went into the company office and found some leave passes and stamped them well up. So the next weekend, I came back to Kenilworth. Unfortunately, I had to come. The railway was Newark, Nottingham, Stafford, Birmingham. And at Stafford station was full of MPs who were looking at everybody's passes.
Well, I've got to go now.
So you've got these stamps.
So that got out of that scratch. And another time I came back, which looking back onto it, I was horrified about it. Of course, nobody who was in the forces were allowed to wear civilian clothes, or they didn't wear civilian clothes. And I got so fed up with this, wanting to get home, the urge of youth, you know, and all that sort of thing. And so one weekend, I got Mary to send me some civilian clothes in a parcel, which I took down to Newark Station and changed me from a uniform into civilian clothes and came back via this railway, travelling as a civvy, you see. Well, on the return journey... who should get in the train at Nottingham and sit next to me was the adjutant of the Octu. If he knew one of his cadets was sitting next to him in civvies, you know. So it wasn't a pleasant journey.
He didn't recognise
him. And he didn't, well, of course, now there's hundreds of AC. They'd have to be uniform, he wouldn't think. So that was one of these things one did. I'd say, looking back, it was horrifying, because if I'd have been found out, I'd have been down the road straight away, on both occasions.
Mm-hmm.
But you do these things, you see.
Yes. What was the general opinion of the military police? You know, what was your...
I really never had anything to do with them.
Mm.
Actually, in the division, during the war, actual fighting, they did quite a good job, because they used to direct the traffic, and they were obviously... often standing on the sort of crossroads directing traffic with shells dropping around them, you know.
Mm.
I don't think they were very popular otherwise. But I really had no comment, I think is the term they use these days.
Did you have any contact with the RAMC at any stage?
Not really, no. Only routine, of course, all these routine things you went through. But,
like what?
Well, you know, just like these... whether you're fit and well and all that sort of thing.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah.
Did you have an opinion of them? Did you?
Oh, ordinary. The things I chaps who I was most amazed about were the army dentists. When we joined up in Beverly, I mean, there was an intake of probably 100 people out in the country who were all wanting about 3 or 4 teeth seen to. And they'd all got to be pushed. And so there were about 3 dentists, you know, with a queue of chaps waiting up to be dentists. But they did a perfect, actually, some of the best dentists we ever had in the way of treat. How they did it, I mean, God, at the end of the day, the poor chaps must have been absolutely creased. Because they had to get through about 100 chaps before the by night, you know. There they were, did a grand job. That's the only time I ever came across them.
So, I mean, as an officer, you had very much better living conditions and conditions of service than the other ranks.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that divide?
Well, it's not at all. When you once got into a fighting unit, like the division, there was very little difference because we all slept on the floor, sort of thing, you know, we all ate the same food. But way back in barracks in England, which I did very little of, the distinction was a bit much on reflection. But at the time, you accepted it as a part of life. But I say, when you're once in the division, we're all on the same level pretty well.
So it wasn't really an issue for anyone then?
No.
Okay. What did you think of your leaders, you know, the great generals and so on?
Well, our immediate people, your ignorance of the world, outside world, outside your little sphere, is complete almost. I thought a lot of our brigadier, because I used to have to go to O group meetings about how we proceeded. Mm-hmm. I thought he was a great fellow.
What was his name? Do you remember?
I can't remember now. I could if I looked in my references there. Our immediate CO, half colonel, CRE 53, I didn't have much time for. Well, I didn't like the look of it. Pure unnecessary thought, that is, because I knew nothing about him really. I had no contact with him, but I didn't like the look of him. and the others you never knew. We had a lot of time for Monty.
He was well thought of then.
The idea was that the general thought that went through the army, I know Monty might be slow, but if you're going to fight, he'll see that you fight under the best conditions. So he was very popular in that aspect. And it wasn't like World War One, where the generals used to push them off by the thousand into the obvious oblivion.
Did you ever meet any of the generals?
Yes, I saw Monty and Churchill. You see those great photographs of them sitting at the side of the Rhine, looking across the Rhine. I think I saw that photograph being taken, actually, because they were both there, sitting on a seat, looking across the Rhine. So I couldn't have been very far away. Yeah.
Amazing. Lots of snapshots in your mind of different things, you didn't manage to celebrate VE Day or VJ Day, really, did you?
VE Day, yes. I think it was this party that I was telling you about with the vicars.
The fountain.
The fountain. I think that was our celebration.
VE Day, right.
Which was actually, we had about 3 days after VE Day. You could have VE Day. Oh, yes, yes, I've got a story about VE Day. We were in Hamburg, and we'd taken over turf some Germans out of a shop just over a jeweller's shop. We thought that might be quite interesting, but it didn't. Not really. But my blokes lads went out into the town and got themselves into no end of trouble. And I spent all VE night going into trying to find them and bring them back. And in the end, I got so fed up that anyone who got false teeth, I took them their false teeth out and put them on the mantelpiece on this billet that we were in. That's my memory of VE night.
That was their punishment, wasn't it?
Yes. They won't go out again now. That's all I can remember. I had no personal celebrations whatsoever. I was trying to keep the peace.
Was Hamburg pretty rowdy that night then?
Well, it must have been. I never saw it.
Yeah, they were all enjoying themselves anyway. Mm-hmm. So what effect, I mean, it's rather a sweeping question really, but what effect do you think the war had on you, sort of mentally and physically?
Oh, perhaps it affected my subsequent way of thinking of life, you know. The standards which we aspire to really these days aren't being maintained. I think that really probably started during my army life. And that's my big moan at the moment, has been for the last, well, obviously years. There are certain standards which we should maintain and which life should have, and they're just being completely disregarded. Mm. Yeah.
Do you think you paid any sort of price mentally for...
No. It's only...
What you missed out on?
The only thing I really missed out is our youth. Mm. I mean, the young chaps between 20 and 30 now seem to me to have a grand life. Mm. We never had that. And that's the one thing, only thing really that I bitch about, really. Mm. Not that what I'd have done, God only knows, but the opportunity wasn't there.
Yes, yeah. Perhaps people took on responsibilities a bit earlier, really.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, when you consider that a bomber pilot was piloting an airplane with hardly any instrumentalisation and help across to Germany at the age of about 23... Mm. Compare that with a modern airliner pilot. These air crews, I mean, at 25 and 26, they were old men. Everything was done ages between chaps of about 25 and down, you know.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. So you obviously look back on your service with some, with some happiness, with some pleasure.
Well, a nostalgia.
Mm. Mm. You wouldn't put it as high as pleasure.
No. It was a part of, put it this way, it's a part of life I wouldn't have missed.
Mm. Right. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, I don't think so. I think we've been over. I'm sure lots of things, really.
Well, yeah, must be. 6 years, wasn't it?
Anything to make up the tape?
That's super. Anyway, thank you very much.
Oh, jolly good of you.
Bob Summers.
Nice to meet you.
End of the interview.
I only wish that I could have had a bit of pre-thought on this and I could have looked at it.
Almost impossible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you very much indeed.
Oh, jolly good. Thank you.